if the British Empire and its Commonwealth last for 1,000 years, men will still say this was their finest hour.
BRB UK. Worse teeth, better accents.
Welcome to episode 380 coronavirus of the Big Red Barrel UK coronavirus. I am coronavirus. Hi! And with me this week is Mr. Timothy K. Coronavirus Hibbs.
No, don't label me with the coronavirus, please. No, don't want to be associated with that. Thank you.
I've got stuff on my mind. I'm really sorry. We're without Dan once again. Funnily enough, being a doctor and coronaviruses happening around the world.
He's busy saving the world.
He's saving the world. One Destiny game at a time.
I like to think he's in a lab doing a montage right now.
I think he's playing Destiny.
doing
a montage. But we thought last week went so well, so start as you mean to go on. We've pulled in a second member of the Big Red Barrel cast, because not heard him for a little while. It's Kev.
Hey, he is absolutely playing Destiny, by the way.
Let me just check. Steam. Steam. Okay. He's playing Destiny. He's blown us off for Destiny, lads.
Classic Dan.
We got coronavirus to talk about, so it's fine. Why would you need a doctor's medical opinion anyway?
Overrated, that's what I say.
I had questions.
I've been listening to these Boris updates every day now. You don't need a doctor. You can just kind of fudge it. It's fine.
Listen to Boris.
Oh, God. We all doomed.
Everyone stay as far apart from each other as you can. Unless you're a teacher, you're buggered. Anyway. So, coronavirus. Let's talk about that happy thing that we keep going on about, because it's a big thing at the moment. Interesting times, because in games especially, because while it's not affecting the majority of game releases and potentially the console releases, it is affecting the professional games media. And I listen to a lot of professional games media podcasts where they're all having to do what we do, basically. Do it over Skype, do it over Discord. Have your webcam mics and your snowballs and your headsets and stuff, and it's nice to sound better than the competition for once. You know?
You can tell they're not used to not being in the same room looking at each other.
I heard it was one of the IGN podcasts I heard today, which started off with someone like literally this. Drop my f***ing headphones. So, that was nice to hear.
Before we do get stuck into the news, can I just put one thing right at the top of the agenda as well, if that's all right?
No.
Well, just the fact that we've had to cancel the GOSH live streams that were going to take part in the hospital, because the building that we were going to do it in is now closed for coronavirus. So, yeah, that part won't be taking place. Speak about some more details of how you can actually get involved in the stuff that is taking place at the end of the show, but just note that anyway.
That's fair enough then. But as we were talking about last week, there was uncertainty with EGX Rest. Tim was all prepared to go. I was a bit cautious.
I was wary, but yeah.
Wary but ready, I would say. Willing to do it for the good of the site. I am not that dedicated, so I was going to do it for my health. EGX Rest has been postponed. So this is the, if you don't know, we bang about it every single year. It's the indie-focused London game show. This happens at Tobacco Dock in London. That's now been pushed back from the spring to the summer. Potentially, we don't know, because this mess might carry on. We don't know how far this goes on, but at the moment, push back to summer 2020. The organizers, ReadPop, they've said that they've monitored the situation constantly over the past few weeks, and following many hours of conversation internally and with their partners, they've taken the incredibly difficult decision to move EGX Res to the summer. Date and announcement forthcoming.
Yeah, there's a lot of things now moving back to the summer and possibly going to be within close time of each other. But ReadPop also do MCM and stuff now as well. But they've announced that that's delayed till the summer as well, I believe. Mm. Other thing that was announced was UK Games Expo as well in the UK this week as well. There's a few things being pushed back. They're all going to have to try and make sure they're not too much on top of each other. And we're not, as you say, we're not even sure that the summer's definitely going to be a safe bet for any of these anyway, no?
No idea at the moment. It's all kind of ear to the ground and see what happens with updates in the media. Tenacon 2020, Digital Extremes, they've announced that the annual Warfare fan convention will be moving to a digital-only format this year. Also, EA, they have cancelled all the competitive live events that they were planning this year with regards to FIFA, Madden, any other competitive games that they usually get on stage and have their shoutcasters and stuff. Those look like they're not happening this year. And also, Gamescom at the moment, that's still going ahead for... When is that meant to be?
That's summer as August. Well, isn't it? Yeah,
August. That's meant to be in August 2020. Cologne has actually imposed a ban on events for more than 1,000 participants, and that ban ends on April the 10th. But there is, again, we don't know what's going to happen in the future.
That might be extended. The one in Italy just got extended today, so yeah.
So we're not actually sure, but they did say that if anyone's bought any tickets and it gets cancelled because of coronavirus, then all the tickets will be refunded.
Yeah, you kind of need to do at the moment. Like, if people are going to, if you're asking people to pay money in tickets, there needs to be some reassurances that if the event does get cancelled, that won't be wasted money, basically.
Yeah, you would expect at the least a refund if that happens. But at the same time, you would expect if GameStop sent out email saying, here's how we're looking after you during the coronavirus and giving all our employees hand sanitizer and all this stuff, that they would actually do it and not make employees have to go out, find their own and expense it when they know full well you can't find hand sanitizer for love nor money. By the way, can we stop sending out emails saying what we're doing to do with corona? I don't need to know what Superdrug's doing with coronavirus.
Yes, oh, God, I've had so many. Yeah. There was a house rental company I used about 10 years ago that told me their coronavirus plan.
We want you to know that we are looking after you during the corona. No, you're not. You're just bugging me by sending me emails.
Yeah, I think the GameStop information that came out where a lot of employees said that, hey, this email that came out saying all these things that they're doing for the coronavirus is completely if that is the case, then it just kind of goes to show, you know, a lot of these emails can be goodwill gestures, but you know, how can you really trust them?
If nothing else, the amount of emails I'm getting from random companies are giving me they're allowing me to build a list of things I need to deal with a GDPR cancellation.
Yeah.
I'm getting a lot of ones that I've spotted going, why? I didn't know I was still signed up to this.
Yeah.
So that's your coronavirus update. I'm sure we'll have more news on coronavirus affecting the games industry next week. But there is actual gaming news. Nintendo Indie World Showcase, we'll go through that first. They put out one of their quick little videos where they just go through a bunch of stuff that's coming out on the Switch. I wrote down the full list and release dates, of which I think only one of them is an actual release date. Everything's summer, spring, to be confirmed, late, you know, that kind of thing. Anything in the list that took your interest at all?
I think the thing that really leapt out at me, because I didn't know it was on the way, although I hope to be possibly reviewing soon, is Wingspan.
Okay.
Really like the board game, and they've seemingly done something different with the video game. I don't know how different, but I'm interested to see where that goes, basically. So, yeah, that was an interesting one for me. And that's the one that's out spring 2020, but I think, by the sound of things, might be out reasonably soon. So
I quite like the look of Bark,
yes,
which comes out late 2020. I Am Dead looked interesting as well, where you play someone who curates a museum and has died, and uses ghosts and has ghostly powers to solve puzzles and stuff.
Yeah, look through people's belongings and stuff.
Yeah. And also Cyanide and Happiness have a game coming out called Freakopolyps, and I like Cyanide and Happiness, so I'll probably go check that out. That's my kind of humour.
I think, yeah, I went through a little period of reading their stuff. But yeah, like, I kind of never checked out any of their game-related content or anything.
Well, I mean, Penny Arcade had a video game out. They've had a few video games out now. Cyanide and Happiness now have a video game coming out. All I need is XKCD to do it, and then you've got my entire webcomic reading of about 20 years ago, 15 years ago, all on video games. Kev, anything grabbing your eye in the Switch releases?
Yeah, Dicey Dungeons is a game that I've had on my Steam wish list for ages, and have really actually been quite interested in it, but I've never got around to buying it. So that might be a perfect Switch game.
Yeah, I was going to say that would be a good one for the Switch. Quantum League looks interesting, though I'm not entirely sure I'd want it on the Switch, but I don't know. Like, that look, That's the one where it was the first person shooter where you get multiple copies of yourself and stuff.
Oh, that one.
Each time you die, there is a copy of yourself that is following the exact path you used before you died. So the more you die, the more versions of yourself there are out there. And you use that to kind of solve puzzles, kill people, take down enemies and stuff. And it looks very interesting, but same with you, Tim. I'm just not a big fan of first-person shooters on the Switch. And I think it's only because I predominantly use the Joy-Cons because I use everything remotely.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah, terrible. And they're not good for FPSs.
What you want to do is, I found a USB Bluetooth stick you can bung into the Switch that just lets you sync up a PS4 controller.
My Switch is, my Switch is my portable console. That's all I use it for, so it's not really
I mean, obviously, yeah, you're not going to get very far.
Sitting on the tube with balancing it on my knees while I use a Bluetooth controller.
I finally caved and bought some new Joy-Cons last week.
Ooh.
I bought some cheaper non-official ones, but ones I quite like the look of and the reviews looked all right, and so far I really quite like. They're like kind of grey and a bit fashioned after the kind of SNES look, which obviously appealed to me. Yeah, see, the box just says Joy-Con pad.
Joy-Con pad.
There's a little sticker on it that says best of. That's it.
Excellent. But the best of Joy-Con.
Best of Joy-Con pad. But yeah, they seem
featuring
quite good
all
so
the hits. Joy-Con drift. The stick not working. Disconnection issues.
Buttons that make your thumb cramp.
I don't have any of those. It has a decent thumbstick as well, and seemed pretty good so far.
Summer and Mara as well. I quite like the look of that. Anime, RPG, puzzly type thing. And Good Life as well, because sweary. Why not?
No one on that Pixel Junk Eden 2 train?
No, I've never been a massive Pixel Junk. Yeah.
It looks nice, but I've never gotten into any of the Pixel Junk games.
Me neither.
I've tried. I don't get the appeal, but they always seem really popular.
Well, they look kind of nice. They look like I should enjoy them more than I do. But
I came dangerously close with the shmup one that they made.
Pixel Junk Shooter?
Maybe that. Yeah, that sounds right. That sounds like it might be a shmup.
They have really simplistic names. But yeah, they always seem to get really kind of high praise in journalistic terms. But that, and then I hear people talk about them and gush over them. And then I buy them and go, I'm just not into this. I don't know what the appeal is.
Oh, Eden is the one I never understood the appeal of, because it was just like hopping around.
Yeah, you don't like artsy fartsy games.
That's very true.
Your words, not mine.
I also like the look of Moving Out as well, which is coming out quite soon as well. But
I've had enough of that this year, to be honest. I don't need a video game.
Oh, you don't need a video game to represent.
No, I've had enough moving.
But that looks like a good one for fans of Overcooked, no?
Yes, that kind of style game, four player, trying to move house, basically. Pack and move. Yeah, fun times. So outside of the Nintendo space, over on Xbox One, Series X and PlayStation 5 news, we finally got some. There was a blog post from Xbox initially, which gave us stats for the Xbox Series X, which then they went and took their new toy over to Digital Foundry, who did a teardown video of the console. And then to follow up, PlayStation put out a tweet and said, yo, what up, fools? We're going to give you some info on the PlayStation 5, which a lot of people got very excited, and it turned out it was just the GDC talk that they were going to do, which I watched the whole thing. That was definitely a GDC talk. That was definitely for developers.
It was my second favorite PlayStation fanboy freakout of the last 2 weeks.
I gotta admit, I was bored. I was bored watching it, but it was interesting at the same time.
It was very interesting. Yes.
I find it very hard to listen to Mark Cerny from Cerny.
Oh, I find it easy to listen to him.
It's easy to listen to him. It's difficult to fully take in everything that he says. I like that he's enthusiastic about really boring sounding stuff, though.
Yeah. It's like ASMR listening to Mark Cerny.
A lot of people said that on Twitter, basically. But
I must admit, I was really interested in the... Like, I'm not a game developer, but just as a web developer, the idea of efficiently assigning memory and grabbing data in a decent way, like that whole SSD portion really was quite interesting to me.
Based on the initial tweet that went out to kind of announce the event, there was a lot of developers that have been working with a PS5 that sent out, id Software especially, they put out something like, yes, this is the most exciting console release in 20 years or something. And then once the event happened, there was a lot of complaints of, you just wiped out all the excitement. But anyway, we'll go through the teardown real quick compared to the two of them. So they're both going to be using 4K UHD Blu-ray drives. Both going to be using 16 gigabyte of GDDR6 RAM, although the PlayStation 5 is going to be using a 256-bit. Memory bandwidth will be 448 gigabits second, and Xbox Series One X will be 10 gigabyte at 560 gigabits second and 600 gigabits at byte at 335 gigabits second. CPUs are going to be 8 Zen 2 cores at 3.5 gigahertz. Same for the Xbox Series One X, but 3.6 gigahertz with SMNT. They are both going to be using Radeon technology again for the GPU. It's RDNA Navi 12 for the Xbox Series X, and the PlayStation is going to be using Navi 10.28. Now, teraflops.
Oh, God.
Oh, good. Now we come to the flops.
How many flops can a teraflop flop if a teraflop could flop flops?
Too many.
So on the Xbox Series X, you're going to be getting 12 teraflops. and on the PlayStation 5, you are going to be getting 10.28 teraflops, which Mark Cerny did mention about teraflops, saying that it's not particularly the best accurate measurement of power that they are aiming for.
you're going to say that when your stats are lower than your directest competitor, though, aren't you? But anyway.
But there's been a lot of debates over teraflops and, you know, units of measurement and stuff with the PlayStation 5 and the Xbox One Series X, but we'll see when that comes out.
The funny thing is, it's so many on both sides of the equation that it doesn't matter who's got more at this point. It's like saying, like, who's got the longest ruler? Mine's a meter and yours is 1.2. It's like, whatever, I can still measure things.
The interesting part as well is the storage, I think, because they've both got SSDs. The internal storage is going to be on the PlayStation a custom 825 gigabyte SSD storage drive. On the Xbox One Series X, is it Xbox One Series X or Xbox Series X? I keep saying
who
Xbox
knows? Series no X. One knows. No one is on ever going to know what it's called.
On
it's
the
a
new
mystery.
Xbox, it's a 1 terabyte SSD storage drive and SSD slot, USB hard drive support on the PlayStation 5. On the Xbox Series X, there's going to be a special Seagate form of memory card that they're going to be working with Seagate on, which explains the large slot on the back of the console, which me and Dan initially thought that was some form of debug, something to read stats, basically, a new slot for that. It turns out is for memory cards, which they said a little while ago. For storage, which they said a little while ago. Now they've shown that it's they're teaming with Seagate to make these new memory cards. Now, if you're running any kind of Xbox Series X title, then you're going to have to run them off the official memory cards or off the hard drive. If you want to play any backwards compatible Xbox One games or Xbox games, then you can run them off a regular USB, so you can move those forward. Talking about backwards compatibility, we know that the Xbox Series X will use Xbox, Xbox 360, Xbox One, and accessories will all be transferable forward.
No mention of Kinect.
No.
No mention of Kinect. And I don't think you'll be able to slot the Kinect in, to be fair. I think they haven't stated if it's going to be the same current thing they're doing at the moment, where everything has to be up-resed before it gets used. You know, they have to have permission to send the game forward for back to compatibility, which I'm assuming they're going to, because you're not going to come out with that before you've got the console out, I don't think. PlayStation, on the other hand, they're only going as far back as PlayStation 4 games and PSVR games. And the idea with that as well is it's games that have to be checked out before they go, before they're ready to be used backwards compatible. In some cases, the new speeds of the GPU and everything can actually make the games run a bit iffy, so they have to be changed ever so slightly. But they say at launch there's going to be 100 PlayStation games that will be backwards compatible.
Well, no. They said they've checked the top 100
most played games,
or, you know, games played by hours, I think, basically. And of those 100, they hope most of them will be, the majority, or, you know, something of that sort of nature, will be available at launch. So not all of that top 100. But you imagine all of that top 100 might not be entirely relevant now.
Now, you talk about the PlayStation fanboy rage, Kev, when the Mark Cerny from Cerny stream came out. But I've been doing the thing you should never do and reading loads of different comment sections.
It's among my favourite things to do while we're stuck inside with the coronavirus.
Yeah, and specifically talking about backwards compatibility, I have seen so much anger. And one of my favourites was someone going, I was willing to spend $1,000 if you included PS3 titles.
Just if I could play Tony Hawk 3 again.
I'm going to Xbox.
Because that's going to play PlayStation 3 titles. Did they necessarily say that there won't be support for PlayStation 3 stuff? I think they're planning on putting all of that through PlayStation Now, possibly, no? I don't know.
So, there was a patent a while ago that came out about the new PlayStation that kind of showed that they wanted it to be backwards compatible all the way back to PlayStation disc. And we don't know if that's happening. It's not something they confirmed. They just kind of said what the deal is at the moment.
Yeah.
We could very well get a year into this console and they go, by the way, PS3 now available. By the way, PS2 now available. You know,
and
we don't know.
The other thing they didn't make clear is whether of those 100 games or the majority of those 100 games that will be available, whether they will be in some way boosted. There seems to be a bit of a argument over whether that's the case or not, but because didn't they say that some PlayStation 4 games will be able to like take advantage of the new tech on what's the name, get a graphical upgrade?
But as Coleman already pointed out, they found that the high clock speeds actually like ran the games too well and made it screw up quite a lot.
It went too fast and then it flew away like a drone that has gone too far from the connection point of its controller.
It's like when you moved Dark Souls up to 60 frames per second in the old days and then suddenly your jump turned into, like, a stumble. You couldn't clear game-breaking areas.
This has been the weirdest build-up for a console launch, I think, ever.
Yeah.
Especially when you look at the last generations, well, this current generation of consoles. With the PS4, we had Mark Cerny from Cerny come out and do his little talk. And he went through the tech specs and what they're trying to achieve.
Went through some of the tech specs, though, no? Like, bits of it.
Well, not into as much detail as this, but he had about 20 minutes where he was talking about tech specs and the power of the cloud and what they're trying to do with Gaikai and all this kind of stuff. And then they focused on video games. And then at the end, they showed you the controller, and we still didn't know what the console looked like. Xbox, on the other hand, they went TV, 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 here's the box. And then a couple of months later, they went, here's all the games. And people were angry. But anyway, this year we've got Digital Foundry videos and I can't remember who PlayStation took their thing off to.
Wired, was it? Yeah.
Yeah, and we got Wired articles for the PlayStation 5 and a logo at CES, and it's been weird.
Yes.
Like, I have no hype for the consoles yet. I'm waiting for it.
It seems slightly muddled. And at the moment, as a base game, like most of what they've said is like, okay, well, show me what it can do.
Until we see games being played, it's just not going to strike a chord with anyone.
Yeah.
Even trailers aren't going to do it at this point. Like,
well, especially if they're talking about like 8K, no? Like, that's not something they're going to be able to show off to anyone really at the moment, other than in the flesh on TV, and that seems like a bad idea at the moment.
It's the issue they had with the PlayStation Pro announcement, which if you go back and listen to our podcast on that, don't. It's me and Tim with no energy after watching this live stream, angry because of the state of the live stream, because the communication was terrible in that live stream. And also, how do you display HDR and 4K technology to devices that can't handle 4K HDR, you know? It's so again, the best kind of hope you've got is going, this is some amazing gameplay. You can't really go, oh, look at the frame rates, look at the HDR, look at the 4K, because not everyone has access to that, not everyone can see that, which is a shame, because that's the thing you're trying to push.
Yeah, but the super fast hard disk data retrieval stuff is actually something you can display in the right game demo, where you could just turn around and see how many things are on the screen, and it'll suddenly shock you as to how little has ever been on the screen in any other game up to this point.
And Xbox are looking to do this whole thing of multiple game suspension at the same time, which I love the idea of. I don't know why I love the idea of it, but I do love the idea of it.
I like the idea of being able to jump from game to game without having to go, oh, I'm quitting out of that game. Have I saved? What's going on with that? Don't really remember. Like, so yeah, that's appealing.
That's a lot of things to keep in memory, which I'm a little concerned about as to how well
that'll
work.
That's why they dedicate 10 gig of the memory, I think they said, to the dashboard for the operating system for these kind of things.
Okay.
So it'll be interesting. And then on the PlayStation side, Mark Cerny from Cerny, he said that the aim there is to kind of get more instantaneous loading.
Yeah.
Not hanging around on loading screens, which again, I love the idea of that too. That's something I've been waiting for a long time.
Oh, the idea of no more winding corridors. Just, I love the idea of no more winding corridors, no more elevators, no more flipping.
Just, yeah, design levels like real life a bit more.
I remember, there was a Crash Bandicoot game and they went, this game has no loading screens in it whatsoever. And it just meant there were areas of nothing.
Yeah,
that you were kind of running down as it was technically loading, but it was hiding it from the player. And then I remember that happening and going, wow, this is the future. And then I remember watching my housemate play Mass Effect in that elevator and went, this is rubbish.
But you know what? It's when I was playing Shadow of the Colossus on PlayStation 2, like the idea at that time of that whole massive world being there with no loading screens was amazing. But playing the remaster a couple of years back, it suddenly occurred to me like, wow, there are a lot of just paths through the cliffs in this game that are clearly just loading in the assets.
Exactly. Tony Hawk's Wasteland as well. American Wasteland, that was it. That was a PS2 one where there's an open city and then there is a large skate park. And to get in between them, you have to go through a long corridor.
Yeah.
Yeah, while a little disc spins in the corner.
I mean, it was the best solution to a really irritating problem.
Well, considering the tech at the time, it was impressive. You know? Masking loading, so that's a thing of the past. So, yeah. We'll have more information as it comes through on the PlayStation 5 and the Xbox Series X. I hope to see something soon. Because we're, what, 6-7 months away from the actual proposed launch
or
of these things?
Are we? That's the
Xbox
question.
Has been saying Thanksgiving on their ad campaign that they ran while Mark Cerny was talking.
And they're both aiming for holiday 2020, and it's not that far away, and we have very little information. I mean, for the last time, PlayStation, at least we saw the controller and the games, and that was in February, I believe.
They also both need to be really careful about the amount of games that got pushed back to September, October, including like Cyberpunk, all of those games are going to take up so much of people's times that they're probably not going to want to get a new console straight away.
Or are they going to want to play their game on a new console?
Yeah,
you can transfer it across as well, but yeah.
Well, with we don't know if anything like that is going to happen with the PlayStation, but with the Xbox especially, where certain titles will have a kind of buy-all element. And Cyberpunk were the first ones to see a project were the first to come out and go, yep, Cyberpunk's going to be that game. You buy it on the Xbox One, you get it on the Xbox Series X. So,
yeah, I suspect maybe they'll go to the effort to make a PlayStation 4 back-compat version for PS5.
We'll see.
I mean, they're crunching enough already, so who knows?
So that is all the headlines for this week, but we've got a couple of points of interest. I'm going to run through them as quick as possible. So more on the Xbox news side. The Xbox Game Pass Ultimate, there's going to be some new perks for members of that system now. You will now get new DLC and in-game content made available, as well as the games that are available in Game Pass. So as of this week, Fantasy R Online 2, there's going to be special cosmetics like an Xbox jacket and a golden mission ticket and all these kind of things. World of Tanks Mercenary, there's going to be stuff in there. And in Sea of Thieves, they're going to have an Ori sail, figurehead, hull, and flag.
That's the important one.
That's the important one. And in Smite, there's going to be stuff in there as well. I'm kind of glossing through it quick because it does just seem like it's what they're doing already with there are certain free-to-play games and certain games that have exclusive content for PlayStation and Xbox downloadable. For instance, if you get Fortnite on the Xbox, you can download a special pack on there that gives you like an Xbox t-shirt. If you buy it on the PlayStation and you're a PlayStation Plus member, you can download a blue t-shirt. You know, it's it cool. Seems like it's what they're doing already, but now they've put it behind Xbox Ultimate instead of just Xbox. So, seems a bit suspect to me. But hey, Super Smash Bros. DLC has now been put on hold, which is very upsetting to me. So Sakurai's come out and said that thanks to deals with the whole coronavirus thing going on in Japan, they've had to put the DLC fighters on hold indefinitely, which is very annoying because I was really looking forward to the next load of DLC. But we'll see going forward. Shadow Man Remaster is in the works for some reason.
Wow.
Did either of you have Shadow Man?
No.
No, I didn't have an N64.
I had this on the PS2, so a later copy of the game. And one of those kind of moments of, why do I have this game? Why do I not have any better games? I have no choice but to play this game, and it is rubbish.
That was my thinking about a lot of PS2 games, actually.
Yeah, fair enough. And I think Shadow Man as well, that was the one where Acclaim, because Acclaim, for some reason, in the late 90s and early 2000s, before they went bust, they relied on some very strange PR tactics where if you named your child Turok, then you would get a free copy of Turok, you know, that kind of thing. I believe Shadow Man, they were trying to get advertisements on gravestones, which the Catholic Church does not allow in this country.
Yeah, I know.
So, that was a big
They
thing.
Were an but odd anyway. Company. Do you remember BM Triple X? Whatever it was called.
The
BMX game that was basically XX. Dave Mirra, but yeah, you could make everyone naked for reasons.
Was it Acclaim that did the... There was like a God of War type game that they were trying to put out, and they had an event where a goat was sacrificed.
That sounds like an Acclaim thing.
I might be making this up. I don't know. Someone look into that for me. Anyway, if you missed out on Shadow Man, good for you. But it's going to come out in 4K on PC via Steam and GOG, PS4, Xbox One, Nintendo Switch. The remaster's going to have 4K resolution. I'm sure that's not on the Switch. Improved shadow mapping, per pixel lighting, anti-aliasing, and the restoration of content that was cut from the original game, among other enhancements.
Such a perfect example of who asked for this.
Yeah. So I believe it's because the engine it's based on is the same engine that some of the Turok games were made on, and some of the other, basically they've been porting a load of games into remasters in the last couple of years from Acclaim, that whoever the hell owns those now has been putting out as remasters, and they must have just run out and gone, oh, there's nothing. Oh, what's that at the bottom of the barrel? Oh, Shadow Man, let's put that out. And the best bit was when they sent out the PR notice, the email that I read for this, it said the beloved fan favorite Shadow Man is coming to
Good God.
I went, who the hell?
Now, if they brought back Aggressive Inline Remastered, we'd be talking business.
And the last one, which I just wanted to throw this in very quick, because we spoke a little while ago, there was going to be a Resident Evil demo made available. That is now available today as we're recording the show. So if you didn't know, Resident Evil 3 is available. The demo is available on PlayStation 4, Xbox One, and PC right now. And also there's going to be a open beta available for the Resident Evil Resistance, which will be the multiplayer survival game, I guess, which will be tacked onto Resident Evil 3. That's going to start on March the 27th on Xbox One, PS4, and PC, and that will run till April the 3rd. But go, if you're interested in the Resident Evil 3 remake, go try that demo right now, because the Resident Evil 2 demo is really, really generous, so I'd recommend doing this one as well. I'm going to go play that after the show and get some impressions for the next show. I was going to do it today, but I got called into the office. Yeah. Anyway, that is all the news we done did for this week, so we're going to talk about the games we done did played, or what we done played, or however we say that each week. Tim, you've got a review game, so you've got to start off first.
Yes, I will indeed. And this one's actually one that I don't know if you'll be interested in, Coleman, but generally PSVR users should be. And I was hoping to tease Dan with it this week, the fact that I had a VR game to talk about. But it's a good one to actually talk about as well. It's a really good game. So yeah, it's called Freediver Triton down, and you are a free diver, i.e. you are kind of diving without any scuba gear. You're kind of hold your breath.
Did you say free diving?
Free diving.
Okay.
You got a kind of oxygen sort of timer on your wrist that kind of lets you know like how long you can hold your breath for, and kind of indicates how long you can hold your breath. And it's kind of logical where you can get air from in most cases, in terms of like air pockets in caves and other places like that. The original kind of site that you're diving in and your kind of training area is a kind of just a pool that you dive into that's got a series of caves that you can swim into, or little openings and caves that you can swim into to kind of find some stuff in and around there without spoiling too much. They've also kind of, someone that you are diving with and he's communicating to you over the radio has left some oxygen throughout the environment, or someone on his crew has, I think, in fact, but has left some oxygen tanks throughout the environment. And that's, you nice can swim up to them and put the face mask, hold the face mask over your thing and kind of suck in the oxygen as well. The kind of main level, the part that the game seems to take in, is then kind of a ship that has capsized that you are trying to escape from. That's kind of as far as I've seen in the game, but I've played, I don't know, 4 or 5 hours. No, maybe 3 or 4 hours at the moment. That's where I'm up to, but I've spent quite a lot of time in that ship. I don't know if that's the main part of the game and there's other parts afterwards, or escaping that ship is the end of the game. Not entirely sure at the moment, but I have really enjoyed the part that I've played. It's got an interesting kind of locomotion system that suits the kind of narrative of what you're doing. Basically, you are swimming forward with like both your hands to kind of propel yourself forward. You can rotate by just swimming with one of your arms, and then you can like grab onto things and pull yourself along. It's probably something that could be play seated. I've been playing it standing up. That seemed to be what they suggested as the best thing to do.
Play in the bathtub. Immersive experience.
My flatmate did say he was going to throw a glass of water at me to further immerse me in the game. But
seems like a good idea when you're hooked up to a VR headset.
Yeah. Fortunately, he did not do this. It's one of those ones that makes you look absolutely ridiculous while you're doing it. Especially, like, I do a kind of breaststroke kind of motion, whereas my flatmate when playing it was doing more of a doggy paddle thing. Both seemed to work. His looked much funnier than mine, I hope. But but yeah, like, it's one of those ones that, yeah, as I said, it makes you slightly look ridiculous while you're doing it. And it's one that I think requires move controllers. I don't think it gives you another option as far as I know. But it kind of, you know, makes the best of that. And like, the locomotion system, as I said, suits what you're doing because you're swimming through the water. You can propel yourself downwards by kind of holding on to both triggers and kind of moving both your arms upwards quickly. Or you can propel yourself forwards by like making a swimming motion, basically. And yeah, as I said, that works really well and kind of suits what's going on. The free diving nature of it means that you have to pay attention to your oxygen and kind of like know where, especially when you're in that kind of ship later on, know where a safe oxygen point is that you can swim back to, and then kind of make that a base and then go out and explore a little bit from there, and then know how to get back to the oxygen quickly. And you're actually like physically grabbing that, and sometimes there's a current and stuff, so you'll have to grab hold of the side of something to steady yourself, and then grab hold of the oxygen mask with your other hand and put that to your face, and then kind of check, you can check on your oxygen supply on the back of your wrist, sort of thing. And yeah, there's like some interesting puzzles that they've put into that mechanic, and like the first opening thing, it feels like it could do with doing a few more levels of that. I kind of hope there's a level of that after the ship that I'm on at the moment, but it's still, yeah, like, it's a game that, I said, I've been playing it with my flatmate. We've both really enjoyed it. It is, does feel like a bit of exercise, and so it's something you can't play in like huge long times, but I don't mind that. As I said, I always kind of like something that's doing one thing, doing it well in a PSVR thing, and a kind of more of an an arcadey blast thing that you can have a quick go on and get like deeply immersed in, and then kind of come out or for a bit go back. And yeah, that's been just really enjoyable with this game. It's only like sort of £12.50 or so, I think. Should point out that I got a review copy of the game. I reached out to the developers and asked for a review copy, and they were kind enough to supply one. But yeah, like
I said, yes, just stop talking, take it.
But at the price it is, like I was like, oh, I kind of regret not giving money to the developer because it's really good and I'm really enjoying it, kind of thing. But yeah, like it's a like, unless you are in some way scared and claustrophobic, there are times in this game where that's probably going to bother you. But that aside, like, it's a hearty recommendation for anyone that owns a PSVR, basically. I would say okay. That it's, you know, the kind of dive thing that you saw on the kind of demo disc thing that came with PSVR.
Yeah, the shark thing that I got scared by. Yeah.
Right, now, that is graphically more impressive. There are times when the budget kind of shows through the cracks a little bit on this. But in terms of like gameplay, it's more of a game. It's gamified. You are swimming around and interacting with things and solving puzzles and pathfinding.
This is more of a pathfinding game, whereas the other one is a sit in one place and watch a shark attack.
But like Anna said, like comparatively, it's not as graphically impressive as that, but the environment is immersive enough. The kind of locomotion method, like, kind of sucks you in as well, kind of thing. And there's times when I was like literally panicking for breath, or like breathing into the mask type thing that's not really there. And you know, like, it's just it kind of grabs you, and like it's good at immersing you in what you're doing, and kind of feeling like a cohesive whole, basically. And it also feels like an intelligent way of designing around the limitations of VR and doing a good job with the setup and everything as well. I think it's out on Steam as well, and so probably available for other VR
this
platforms.
This came out a year ago on the PC. But what the PSVR is the PSVR version is an extended edition, which has all the content that they ended up cutting. They put it into this version instead.
Okay, and I'm not sure how and which bits are extended, but as I said, I've got a good few hours out of it already, and I think I've already got more than that £12.50's worth of recommendation sort of thing. And I've still got a bit of the game to go. So yeah, like a definite recommend. Basically, it's exactly what I like to see PSVR doing. I put this alongside kind of Rush in the terms of it's an exhilarating sporting based type of thing that I wouldn't want to do in real life, and I'm glad that I can do in VR, because I wouldn't want to do free diving in real life, but it's a cool thing to actually kind of experience for in this sort of environment. Yeah, it's cool.
See, looking at this reminds me a lot of Adrift, if you remember that one, which is a similar game, but instead of underwater, you're in space.
Yeah.
Which was a gorgeous game about floating through space with having very little oxygen available.
Yeah.
And having to collect tanks along the way, which it's probably a while ago now, but there was a Big Red Ramble video I did for BRB TV, and that kind of explains the reason I wouldn't be very good at this game, because I freak out when I think I have no oxygen, even if it is a video game.
Yes, I did wonder if this one would be a bit too intense for you, and there is a possibility that is the case, Coleman. But
yeah,
but
I get them NAM flashbacks to Sonic Sonic's 2 Chemical Zone. Well, I'm running out of air going dun 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 dun.
Still the most terrifying music ever put in a video game.
But other than that, yeah, it is a strong recommendation. Kev, I think if you can pick this one up for a similar price on Steam and stuff, then I think you should.
Okay.
Yeah.
I messaged Dan saying that Tim is talking about a VR game. Would you care to comment? He said, "F me. I knew I was feeling sleepy for a reason." There we go. Kev.
Hello.
You have been playing Ori and the Will of the Wisps.
I have.
We were talking about this last week, but you've got substantially further than we have, so please go for it.
Well, I haven't got too much more to add than you guys already discussed last episode. What I will say is that I'm a massive fan of the first game, and in that game, the platforming was just like flawless, but the combat was just whatever. It was something you did along the way. But in this game, the combat has been so revised, and the way it's really good on its own, and then you add in all of the platforming stuff you can do. So you can like give someone a big smash on the head and then use the zip line ability to zip up to the top of the screen and then use the dive ability to dive into the water and then come back up behind them. There's so many like tactical possibilities now in this game, which is something that I wouldn't have expected to be able to say about it. That it's absolutely just scratching the right itches for me in a big way. And now that I'm at the what I assume is the end of the game, or thereabouts, I've got all of these abilities, so I can like dig through sand now, I can shoot myself out of water puddles, and like it's just there's so much going on. I went through an area yesterday where, like, for those who know Dark Souls, it's like the catacombs, but or the Tomb of the Giants rather. It's just this massive dark area,
right,
where you cannot see anything outside of about 3 feet either side of you. And then if you spend too long in the dark without getting to the next light source, then you'll die. And it's really intense. And I'll be honest with you, there's a few moments there where I thought it actually wasn't very fun. but then you get to the point where you find one of those spirit trees and it gives you the ability to turn a like flare on and off. And like, I won't spoil just how that affects the environment and how you interact with it, but there's a lot of really clever level design in it, which was, you could say that about the first game as well, but it's just been taken to a whole new level. And that was probably, Blind Forest was probably one of my favorite games of this last generation.
Oh wow, high praise.
And I love this one so much more already. I'm like, if it weren't for the fact that like Doom and Half-Life Alyx are on the horizon, like I would probably just start from scratch as soon as I finish it to go through it again and just enjoy it. It's a stunning game. The art is amazing. The music's amazing. Just the story. Every time there's a little cutscene where Ori goes up and hugs a bear, it's just like I start crying. It's so good.
Now, following on from last week's conversation, would you recommend, because I've stopped playing because I intend to go play the first game, do you think I should go play the Switch version first and then come back to this, or would I be okay with just carrying on with the second one?
You would lose virtually nothing by just starting with the second game. The first game is amazing, don't get me wrong, and it'll prep you in. So the second game introduces you to a lot of abilities really quickly, which I come from the perspective of having had all of those abilities in the previous game, so I learned how to use them, what to look for in the environment. It gets introduced very quickly in the second game, and it would be interesting to know whether that speed of ability acquisition actually is like intense for someone who's not played through the first game or not. But the first game would, at the very least, if you were to go through that, and it's only about 8 hours the first game, it would introduce you to all that at a lot nicer pace. So there's that.
It seems like a very... I mean, I'm glad they re-released it on the Switch. I have it on Game Pass, so I could go play it on my Xbox, but I do like having these kind of little games to take on the go, and Ori seems very fitted to the Switch, so...
Yeah, I mean, it's a tight platformer, and, you know, much like Super Meat Boy, there's a perfect fit for the Switch and things like that. That's what I will say is, if you've not played either game yet, then... or much... it gets very difficult. there's just no getting around it. As you know about me, I look for a certain amount of masochism in the games that I really get caring about. And, Ori definitely scratches that itch for me in a big way.
Ori's the Dark Souls of plat.
I'm not going to say it. I'm not going to say it.
It's definitely a very you game, Kev. But as I said last week, it's definitely a game that I've enjoyed and hope to go back to and play a bit more of, because I did enjoy what I played so far. I think for me, it would be a hard game to put down for too long and try and pick up again as well. So.
Oh yeah, yeah. You wouldn't want to take a long break from it, because your memory, muscle memory, will just fall apart.
Yeah.
Did either of you ever play Rayman Origins, Rayman Legends, and then get to like the end bit where there was like an optional series of levels at the end where it was just like you've got to do everything pitch perfect execution or you die and start again.
Those games, but I definitely never finished them. I remember arguing with my mates, but no.
Right, okay, because that was one of my favourite things about those games, is you had that optional ending part that was kind of an epilogue to the whole game, where it was just like, now here's some real platforming. If you make a single mistake, you start the whole level again. Have fun. But when you actually got the flow going and learned everything that you needed to press at any given time, it was so satisfying, like getting a perfect on an extreme rhythm game or something. And Ori, while not up to that level of difficulty, definitely rings those bells.
I need to check, because there's the Ukulele sequel, which isn't Ukulele 2, it's called something completely different.
Yes, and it's a completely different kind of game as well.
Yeah, it's more of a side-scroller than a third-person mascot platformer.
It's apparently very good.
Yeah, I've heard really good things about it, but apparently the way that game works is, from the very start, you can go to the last boss. But to get to the last boss, you have to go through this kind of corridor of traps, and if you make a single mistake, then that's it, it's done. And the idea is you go through different bosses to kind of ease up the traps so that that final part is easy for you to get through. I need to look and see if anyone's done it without actually defeating any of the other bosses at all.
Undoubtedly they have.
Because that's got to be really cathartic to watch. Yeah. Okay, so more recommendations for you in the Will of the Wisps. If you've got Game Pass, then available on PC and on the Xbox One. So go for those. If not, it's worth a buy.
And it's 25 quid, which for, I'm about 16, 17 hours in at the moment, just coming towards the end. And like, when have you ever played a game that was, you know, 17 hours long and didn't cost a full whack?
Yeah, that's a good
point.
It's
been a while for me.
It's been a while. Dreams.
Can come
true. Someone could argue dreams, because that's just games. It never stops. Why would you ever need another game? You could play Ori and Dreams.
Has that game crossed the porn threshold yet, where there's more porn in it than actual games being made?
They have a pretty good filter, but there are XXX communities out there.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
Anyway, getting off that very quickly. So I've jumped back into Mortal Kombat 11 because the last of the DLC has come out until they go here season two, I'm sure. Spawn is the latest DLC character, and my God, he is a Spawn-ass Spawn. He is a really good representation of Spawn. So Spawn in video games so far, I believe, has been an arcade game, a really crap movie tie-in for the PlayStation, probably a PC version of that, I think. Spawn's been in Soul Calibur.
Yeah,
on
I was
going to
say, yeah, Soul Calibur.
On the Xbox, sorry, the original Xbox. And now he is in Mortal Kombat 11, and he is a really good fit. So before I get into any of this character at all, I do want to say the best thing about this character, he is voiced by Keith David.
I just looked that up to see if they got... there was a part of me that was hoping that Matey Boy from the film was doing the voice.
No, Keith David. Keith David all the way, baby. He voiced Spawn in the animated series, I believe.
That sounds right, yeah.
But I don't care. I just like Keith David, so he's got a beautiful voice. So yes, you've got Keith David as Spawn, and Spawn is Spawn in the full range of effects. He's got the cape, he's got the chains, he's got a ridiculous amount of guns available, and he looks amazing, he sounds amazing. He is a very bulky looking character, and he is kind of, in his attacks, he's kind of slow moving, but he is, in his movements, very fast, which is kind of... To begin with, it's difficult to work out, but after a lot of mastering, it's kind of like when they released the Terminator character, he was very slow but powerful, but he didn't look like he should be a slow character in comparison to some of the other characters available, say like a Goro or a Shao Kahn or someone. But after you get used to this character, he's really cool. The only issue I've got with him is because he's got the big cape and stuff, in certain points of the game, he looks ridiculous on the screen because you can take half the screen up and get in the way a bit. And it kind of gets to, it kind of brings out that Marvel vs. Capcom feeling of, what am I doing right now? I can't see anything, and there's always colors and
cape everywhere.
Flashes. It's cape everywhere. So yeah, he's got some amazing looking cape effects. He's got some really cool moves. So there's a lot of switching between punch, kick, hell powers, guns, chains, cape stuff. His kind of the... So you get like a brutal move, I think they call it. I can't remember. It's a move where you build up energy and then you hit the two triggers and then you do like a cool looking cutscene move.
Oh, what used to be the X-ray or whatever it was.
Well, the X-ray still exists, but they're kind of dedicated to other parts of the game. So like background maneuvers and what have you. In this one, he ends up almost kind of like a Batman stance where the cape lifts up, but his cape is just filled with every type of gun imaginable and just fires off into the opponents. That's really cool. And I've got his first fatality, so he kind of wraps the opponent's head in his cape and then lifts them into the air. And then all his chains start piercing them through all these different ways. And then this energy kind of shoots into the canes and the body explodes. Looks flipping cool.
It's a perfect fit for Mortal Kombat, really, isn't it?
Yeah. At the moment, with all the ones that have been released at the moment, I think Shang Tsung and Terminator are probably my favorites. I do like Joker because it seems since DC versus Mortal Kombat, they have been trying to do Joker with these violent moves but haven't been able to because DC Comics. And then the same with Injustice. Like, he has violent moves, but there's no blood or anything. And in Mortal Kombat, they're like, okay, how do we finally get this? Joker's in Mortal Kombat. Cool. Now we can rip heads off, smash people in with crowbars. Just
go nuts. It's
really, really cool. Yeah. I hope there is a round two of DLC for this, because I'd like to see more kind of guest characters thrown in as well. But Spawn is definitely a very good fit with Mortal Kombat 11. And if you get the season pass as well, they've added these costumes are available as well. If you've got the season pass, you can download them included in the price. If not, I think they're like a couple of quid, but there is a pack of movie costumes. so you can have someone look a bit like Indiana Jones, someone look a bit like Conan. Jackie Briggs, you can make her look like Ripley, which is quite cool. And then also, I think there's a second costume for Jackie Briggs where she looks like Spawn. So you can have a kind of male Spawn, female Spawn battle off, and it looks very, very cool. But yeah, really, really, I've been really impressed with Mortal Kombat 11 so far.
It's a brilliant game.
Yeah, if you can find it on the cheap, definitely pick that up, because I don't know, following all the kind of crunch stuff before the game came out and the complaints against the studio, I was a bit hesitant to get this, but it looks so good, and I was like, I got 10 that I never got into, so I sat there and played all of 10 and went, I need 11 now. So I'm really happy that I managed to find this for like 20 quid and get all the DLC and stuff. It was, yeah. Super
I will say the story is absolutely bonkers.
Yeah, time traveling stuff, and
in preparation for 11, because I never completed 9 either, because 9 just got 9 at some point, its difficulty just got too much for me, and so in the end, I just watched someone's 2-3 hour video of all the cutscenes.
That is sometimes the way to go. I actually watched through all of the MK9 and MK10 cutscenes before 11 came out, just to remind myself what the hell was going on.
Pretty sure I played all three of them, but anyway.
I think I got something like 40 minutes into the story of 10 and went, I think I'm going to have to watch the story of 9 because I don't know what's going on. Did the story of 9,
wait,
then went back to 10.
Was he dead the whole time, or what?
But see, I played through them all, but you could probably both tell me more about the story having sat there and actually watched the videos than I could have remembered about playing the games years ago.
It's a lot. I would need a primer, to be honest with you. There's so much that goes on in those games.
And there's stuff that goes on outside of the games in comics and stuff that they don't explain at all in the game. Like, the thing I had a confusion with was at the end of 9... Sub-Zero gets turned into one of the cyborgs. You know, his brain is removed from his body. His body exists no more and is placed inside a robot. Then by 10, he's back to normal. And it's not explained anywhere in the game. Yeah. It turned out it was one of our listeners explained it happened in a comic and gave me the story. So, hey, there you go. but yeah, Spawn, recommended. That game's recommended. It's so much fun. I'll have to bring it around again, Tim, so we can have a good old slap fight once the corona's all out the way. Anyway, that is all the games we done played. We've got to get out of here, so we're going to wrap up. And this should be a pretty quick run through until we get to the comments section, because there have been some corona naughtiness going on. So, Tim, do you want to go on for that?
Right, so yeah, as I mentioned at the top of the show, that we won't be doing the live streaming event from Great Ormond Street now. As you know, as much as a shame as that is, we were kind of possibly expecting it, which is the reason we didn't announce too much else of what was going on with that. But yeah, like the one thing that
and after you queued up The Rock as a secret guest,
the one thing that you can do is that everyone can do is get involved with the individual live stream individual live streams that everyone's doing at home, that we've got some people signed up for that. I'm now going to change my plans and do something related to that on either the Friday or the Saturday, probably the Saturday, and do some live streaming for that as well. But yeah, like, that's something where we'll have more details about what we're doing coming up. But there are already people that are signed up to it, and you can sign up for it as well. There are more details on Geek Out for Gosh. You can check that out on Great Ormond Street's page, but also just on social media stuff at Geek Out for Gosh on Twitter, and I believe at Geek Out for Gosh with a number four on Facebook as well, basically. So yeah. Join in with that. You can sign up yourself and sign up to Tiltify and get donations straight to the hospital for doing some live streaming yourself, or just come along and support someone else that is live streaming and either give them some money or give them some support in terms of viewing and generally getting the message out there so other people can support them as well.
Good. And Tabletop Tuesday... Oh, dear.
Oh, yes. Well, postponed for the foreseeable, which was a shame because we had some really good games coming up. But look, in this environment, I actually got some advice from Dan, spoke to him on the phone and said, look, I'm thinking of postponing it. Is that a good idea? And it was kind of slightly ahead of, people cancelling smaller events such as ours. But I thought it was for the best. I don't think what we generally do a lot of time, encouraging strangers to get together in a confined space and for an extended period of time and come into physical contact via like pieces of, you know, a board game and stuff, that all sounded like a recipe for disaster in the current environment.
It sounded fine. All you had to do was stay behind at the end of the night and sterilize yeah. every single piece.
Wash your damn hands.
As much as we'd like your hands. To support our loading brethren at the moment, who are probably going through some hard times being told that the customers need to stay away but not being legally advised to close, which is a complete dick move from the government because it means they can't claim any money in their insurance, and a lot of other pubs and places in similar situations. All good saying there'll be money available for compensation, but not very good when you're not actually making details available of how and when that will be. But yeah, like it's a really hard situation for a lot of people at the moment. Like we took the decision to postpone Tabletop Tuesday because I think it's for the best. As I said, got advice from Dan himself. There was probably not many better people to get advice from at the moment. And yes, took the decision to postpone that. It's sad. And I missed out on the chance to tell people in person, which I feel bad about. But yeah, with things getting more serious in the last week, I think it was definitely the right decision to take. And yeah, it will be the case till at least April, but we'll be kind of updating that decision as we go throughout the months and seeing when we will be bringing things back. I look forward to doing so, but I'm not going to rush into it and put other people's health at risk, basically.
Sensible choice.
Can I make a suggestion?
No.
Oh. Go on. Okay. Let me make a suggestion.
Okay, then.
So, I reckon...
Yeah?
And you can poo-poo this if you want, but...
I will poo-poo.
So, each week that you have your assigned game,
yes.
I think you then put that aside in a pile, and then when we finally bring back Tabletop Tuesday, you bring every game that you were going to do in the absence... And you can make it some amazing, like, middle finger to COVID, to COVID-19 event.
Let's go with no.
Ah, that was a good idea.
It's a bad idea, Coleman. Every game deserves its
People
own
on social
week.
Media, bombard Tim, say Coleman had a great idea.
No one is going to think you had more a games. Great idea, Coleman. No one.
He's just being lazy. He didn't have enough games for the whole year. Made this all up.
Well, hey. I've kind of put things on pause, so yeah.
Right, we've got community feedback, so if you want to give community feedback, if you want to be involved in this section of the show, you can do so via the comments section on BigRedBarrel.com, on Facebook, Big Red Barrel, Facebook.com/BigRedBarrel, or Twitter.com/BigRedBarrel, or just at Big Red Barrel on Twitter. And you can find us on Discord, where there's a link on the front page of Big Red Barrel. Also, you can just look up Big Red Barrel on Discord, or just ask one of us on Twitter or something. We can get you an invite sorted out, if that's the way you wish to go. Famous Jamus via the comments section, he said that he likes to think that Dan's working with MC Scrobble Dobble to make some sort of 80s hand washing PSA.
That is probably precisely what he was in the laboratory doing in that montage. otherwise looking at beakers and staring through microscopes and writing on a whiteboard.
I'll have to fill in for Dan on this section, so bear with me. It's a terrible impro, but yo, 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 it's your boy. Being sick, yo. Something like that.
Yes.
Over to Discord, Bleezy Boy.
Bleezy.
He said, if working from home, what percentage of your day is acceptable to play video games instead?
89%.
I'm not afforded that luxury, so I don't know. Get away with what you can. You're getting paid for it anyway.
I think unless you work in some
form. If you work in some form of emergency service that you need to be on hand, don't play video games in your when you should be working. Naughty.
Well,
otherwise, fine.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Of course. That's fine. That's different.
In your legally established and definable breaks set aside by the European Parliament, like you should get, what isn't it, 20 minutes every 4 hours with a 40 minute break every 8 or something.
Yeah, back in the day when I used to work from home, whenever I needed to, I'd work and then I'd have my hour's lunch break, and then that would be dedicated to, I think it was Star Wars Battlefront at the time. So I get a bit of grinding on that, and then I go back to work.
So basically, for every 8 hours you work, you can take a one-hour gaming break, officially.
There you go. That's the sensible reason. But if you can get away with it.
Yeah, probably 2 to 3.
Spiky Chris via Discord also, he wanted to know, what was the first game you remember finishing on your own, and what age were you? Mine was Metal Marines on the SNES, which I rented from Global Video when I was maybe 9 or 10. My 7-year-old finished Astral Chain,
ooh,
mostly on his own, on the easy mode, which makes combat easy, but he still did most of the puzzles on his own.
That's pretty good. Like I did that game in normal mode, but that's still pretty good for a 7-year-old.
And that took you like a year.
Not really, but okay.
It felt like a year because you were talking about it every week.
That's just how I talk. But yeah, I don't remember. I think a lot of the early games I played like weren't really completable. They might have had like a kill screen state that I never got anywhere near type of thing. But like
an abacus.
Yeah, a lot of them were...
How do you finish an abacus?
How do you finish an abacus? Yes, Colin, exactly. My first console was made out of wood. That doesn't make it an abacus.
I know how you finished your first game. You got the ball in the cup, which was attached to the string, and then the game's complete.
And fin. No, it's only halfway though, Coleman.
That's what video games were like when Tim were a lad.
Yeah, no, I'm trying to think. Like, I don't remember what the first game I ever thought. Okay,
well, you ever think, Kev? Do you know?
I have a best guess. It will definitely be something on the Amstrad 464. probably like. Best guess, one of the Roland games, like Roland in the Caves or Roland on the Ropes.
Or Roland on the Rats.
Or maybe Ghostbusters.
Oh, no. No one completed Ghostbusters. You're lying.
Maybe I didn't. Here's the thing is, like, I know that I beat games back then, but as Tim said, a lot of those games didn't really have finishes. Like, I played a lot of Oh Mummy, but I don't think you could beat Oh Mummy.
There was a lot of, back in the day when games came on cassette tapes, there was a lot of British developed games where they would not finish the game,
okay,
so they would just make it glitch out, yeah, on the, yeah, like, where they got to.
Oh, maybe Dizzy.
Oh, one of the Dizzy games.
Four.
Dizzy, I do have an answer for this. It may not be the first, but it's definitely the earliest I can remember.
Okay.
And that is, and I can't remember the exact name of the game, but it was something like Pac-Land. It was the one that was a 2D sideward scrolling Pac-Man game, basically.
Okay.
But we got what we thought was to the end of the game, and then they told you to, and I think you were going, I seem to remember going right to left in that game, but then...
And then they flipped it in reverse,
yeah, they flipped
and you
had
it in
reverse,
to play it all backwards.
You had to play the whole game backwards, and I remember...
They Castlevania'd you.
Actually doing that and getting all the way to the end of that game. Like,
Pac-Man, Symphony of the Night.
It was twice as long as we were originally expecting. But yeah.
Oh, well. I remember mine exactly. Again, a lot of games that you couldn't really complete. They just kept on going and going and going. So like Pong and Submarine, you know, stuff like that. Very simple games. The first one I remember literally finishing in full on was Treasure Island on the Commodore Plus 4, which I've mentioned a few times on this show now. It's one of my earliest video game memories. But that's the first game I finished. I don't know how old I was. I know I was in infant school. So... It's a while ago.
I'm just thinking my first game I completed might actually be Tiernanog on the Spectrum ZX.
Wow.
I remember playing that with my mum, so technically me and my mum beat it.
See, I think what happened is I watched my sister beat Treasure Island, who's 2 years older than me, and then I just remembered what she did and did it on my own.
Yeah.
But I played a lot of that game.
First game you completed, you cheated, is what you're saying, Colin.
I didn't cheat. No, no. We used to take turns, and I could get further than her at some point. And then I think when she'd figured out what I was doing in a particular way, she was like, oh, that's how you do that. Okay.
And then she just
put in the logic, finished it herself. But it took me a while to complete it because Blackbeard would chase you at the end and I would get scared and turn the thing off. So it took a little
while.
That's
fair enough, yeah.
That's how young I was. Anyway, so not necessarily on our own, but those are the games we completed early. Don't remember what age because we're really old.
Yes,
really old.
Skydark.
Mine was all on tape.
Skydark via Discord also. He has given us his question of the week. He wants to know, how big is the backlog of games to play / finish?
Sorry, I've just remembered a possible slightly better answer to the last question that also dates me, and you'll probably laugh, but Moonwalker on the arcade.
Oh man, the arcade port of Moonwalker is brilliant.
Yeah.
Especially in comparison to like the Mega Drive version.
Oh yeah, that was great.
The Mega Drive version was a bit
Mega Drive version's fun enough because it is what it is, but when you saw the arcade version, it's like, wow, what is that? You didn't even know it was a Michael Jackson game. It just looked awesome.
And probably the Simpsons arcade game and the Turtles arcade game, but
yeah. Oh, I completed both those recently as well. I went back through them all.
It's like Bar versus the Space Mutants.
Oh, that is so hard. I never got past the
Rocker. I don't think I ever beat level 2.
I'm not sure anyone ever did.
I remember I beat the boss in the shopping mall, which was the Babysitter Bandit, but I don't remember what came after that, and I know whatever came after that I didn't beat.
God, we're old.
Yeah, that was my first game on the Amiga, so there you go. Skydark, he wants to know how big our backlog of games is.
Huge.
To play/finish, and are we still buying games?
Years worth, more than I could probably play in my lifetime, and I'm an idiot.
Do you know, For me, I've not really had any games come out in the last 5 months that I've been really interested in, so I've been actually decimating my backlog, which has been really good.
It was a drier Christmas, but yeah, I've had less time to play games of late, so that's been somewhat restricted my ability to catch up on my pile of shame. Although, I don't know, there's a few games I've completed in the last year, I guess, so I haven't added to it overly much, basically.
So on my PlayStation 4 library, there are 400 and something titles, and that's titles that have been sent to me, bought PS Plus, all that kind of stuff over the years, and I finished a handful. But also I've just moved and I've literally just put two giant crates of games in the attic that I also have probably completed a handful, so the backlog is massive. And yes, I do keep getting new games because I want new shinies.
I finally got around to Devil May Cry 5 last month.
What do you think?
Fun.
I'm struggling to keep with it.
I
live for the V chapters. I don't really like playing as Nero, which is unfortunate because it takes up most of the game. But V was excellent to play.
Last one, Dear Med on Twitter, he said, how many flops must Terraflop flop if it stops making any flopping sense? Also,
who cares?
10.3 or something.
Now that the specs are known, how do you see the PS5 XSX being priced? I expect PS5 £449 and the Xbox £499. Yeah.
I think they are both the two minimum answers I would give.
Minimum? Yeah. Ooh. See, I'm hoping they're the maximum.
No chance.
No. Someone went through the components of the new Xbox and priced them for PC, and it was just under £1,000.
Which is somewhere in the region of where the Xbox One and PS4 was originally as well, before they launched.
I'm thinking £500 as a minimum. I really hope I'm wrong.
The SSDs and GPUs they're sticking into those things are like cutting edge. There's no way they're getting them cheap.
Well, I think it's going to be especially difficult fulfilling demand this year, like with a lot of the components and stuff that they want to put in there. No, so
we'll see.
Yeah, that could drive the price up, but also the price needs to be quite low because a lot of people might not have too much what's the phrase I'm looking for? Surplus income, basically, you know, to sort of deal with. Yeah, could be tough. Anyway, yeah, be interesting to see.
So that is all the community feedback, and that is the show for this week. If you wanted to throw in your own two cents on any of the stuff that we've been talking about, I think the best way to do it at the moment is on the Discord in the BRB UK Lounge, we've called it. This is a nice little comment section where you can have a chat with us. If not, Facebook, Twitter, or in the comment section on bigredbarrel.com. Anyway, this has been a big bumper show for episode 383 of the Big Red Barrel UK podcast. Until next week, where hopefully Dan's back, I have been Coleman.
I might have been Tim.
I've been Kev.
And we'll see you next week. We won't see you. It's audio-based format. But until next week, dear listeners, goodbye.
Your ears are quite welcome for the podcasting goodness that you just heard. Why not roll on over to BigRedBarrel.com for more podcasts, news, reviews, and videos from the biggest, reddest site on the internet, BigRedBarrel.com.